Anyway, yes, it's the end of the show. It's the end of the series, apart from Lug Radio Live and Unleashed.
It's fucking not the end of the series. I'm going to stab you in the face with a fucking bottle of comfort. Season 4!
Episode 22.
Yes, Return indeed. It's the penultimate episode.
It's the last penultimate episode of the series.
It's not the last.
It's not the
there's
last
gonna
one.
Be another one next.
Is there going to be another episode after this one in this series?
No.
Season 5 opens with Lug Radio Live.
After this is Lug Radio Live and Unleashed from Lug Radio Live 2007.
Yes,
but
which is the last
episode. That's not a proper episode. It's a weird episode in which we thank people and give out Nokia N800s.
So the episode of Sky, the episode at SkyCon, that didn't count.
The last two Lug Radio Lives were...
The completely wrong ginger bastard is Stuart Langridge.
Yes, the completely wrong bearded bastard is John O'Bacon. And especially with us here in the studio, we have...
Matthew Ravel's back.
And no Aid and no Adam, because they're both on holiday.
And Matt does
Aid's on a course.
Matt does a perfect job of replacing both of them.
He does. Fantastic job.
Good to have you back.
Hang on. Hello, I'm Aid.
And hello, I'm Adam.
There you go. That's right, yeah. It's like they're in the room.
It is good to have our old pal back.
Yeah, it's nice to be back here. Thank you very much.
You know, a few people since you've gone have sort of said to me, oh, is everything all right between you guys and Matt?
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
It's like, yes. Yeah, no, totally amicable.
We're not the Beatles.
Listen.
Matt left because you didn't like us, but we still like him.
Just listen. I hate free software. That's the problem, right? I hate freedom.
You heard it here.
Well spoken.
Possibly
Matthew.
Before the intro music.
Well spoken, Matthew P. Ravel. On tonight's show, we're going to talk about...
we're going to speak to Ian Murdoch, Mad Murdoch.
Howler Mad.
Howling Mad Murdoch.
Let's talk about the... I've got a story to share about my experience with Google Ads.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the BBC and iPlayer and Windows DRM and what they could do about it.
At some length.
Let's not forget that even though the world is a perfect place in many ways... Some bits of it are fooked.
And one bit that's not fooked is that it's Lug Radio Live on Saturday.
And one bit that's not fooked is that you are being OR, been mostly eaten.
I've been OR, mostly OR with OR.
Yeah. Mostly being annoyed with your PlayStation 3.
I've been mostly setting permissions with OR.
Let's get on with it.
I think it's safe to say that one of the best things we've got here in the UK is the BBC.
It is, indeed.
It's one
of the five greatest things about the United Kingdom, along with tea and the Royal Family.
And the NHS.
The Royal Family.
And the NHS.
The Royal Family.
What's the fifth one, do you
reckon? The House of Lords.
Fuck off House of Lords.
Fuck off House of Lords, but don't fuck off Royal Family. Right, okay.
Yeah.
I've got no problem
with hereditary privilege, just the House of Lords hasn't got any hereditary peers in it anymore. Anyway, moving on.
Jono tries to not stab back in the face. The BBC's pretty cool, and they've got bags and bags of content, and they're talking about putting it online. So we've talked a lot in the past about the BBC, the Open Archive, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And just before we started recording, the three of us had a bit of a discussion about this, and we were talking about how the BBC basically have not found a DRM system that's cross-platform. That's the reason why they've not using an existing system, so they're implementing their own system.
We ought to mention that the BBC are just about to bring out a thing called iPlayer, which will allow you to watch the last 7 days worth of BBC television on your computer, download it, watch it, whatever. And they said it needed to be protected by DRM. The only one they could find that was suitable was Windows Media Player, which means that iPlayer will be Windows only.
Right.
Mac eventually.
Well, what they've said is, we're aware that Mac and Linux people can't watch it.
So I was
they've made a specific pledge if it will be Mac eventually. Linux, we don't give a flying arse about.
What they said was, we know that Mac and Linux people can't get at it, and we're aware that the Mac thing's a problem. We're going to try and fix it. I don't know whether they're going to fix it just for Mac people, which is going to piss me off.
But they do specifically cite the Mac thing as the thing they're going to fix.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we were talking about this earlier on, and about this the concept of a DRM system. And I was just thinking, right, a sort of easy solution to this problem.
Yep.
In the UK. We have. I found out at the weekend that a lot of Americans don't realise this, so I'm going to explain. In the UK, if you own a television that can receive television. You have to buy a TV license. Now, a TV license costs about, I think it's what, 160 quid for
136 a year.
For a colour TV, and then...
You get a discount if you're blind. No joke.
Right. Okay.
So, I think it's a fiver a year if you're blind.
What, discount? Or it's a fiver in total?
I think it's a fiver or a tenner a year that you have to pay.
They charge fucking blind people fiver.
You can still listen to the radio.
Motherfuckers.
Audio description as well on channels these days.
Right. You can, and then you can buy a black and white license, even though you can't really buy a black and white set.
Quid, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have to buy a TV license, even if you're not going to watch TV.
Which is true in most European countries.
Even if you don't, is it? Mm. I never knew that.
I ought to point out before, while all of you Americans and other aliens are exploding at the very notion that you'd have to buy a license to watch your television, those of you who have seen something like BBC America will occasionally notice people on the BBC making reference to the unique way the BBC is funded. The way the BBC is funded is through the TV license money. They yep. get some of it. I don't think they get all of it.
They get all of it.
Do they get all of it?
Yep. In a very nice stylist way, they get to then direct the money. No. Yeah, it is uniquely funded, which means that essentially commercial pressures, the intention is, don't shape what the BBC's output is, which is bullshit, of course, because they make a lot of money by then selling DVDs and selling shows to America.
But equally, you never have to have any adverts.
Anyway,
yeah.
This isn't a discussion about licensing.
Kiefer Sutherland said that he thought that the BBC's showing of 24 was really good because there weren't loads and loads of adverts in it.
Yeah,
we don't get adverts on the BBC. And the BBC do lots of great stuff. They really do. We're not going to get into a discussion about TV licensing.
Whether the BBC is a good idea or not.
Because we have mixed views.
For the moment, we'll stipulate that it is, and you're welcome to disagree with us. But anyway.
Fuck off. Ridiculous. Anyway, so we were thinking about how they could solve this problem. To me, you know, everybody who has a TV license gets a unique TV license identification number.
Yep.
And why can't we use that and a password to access that content? That, to me, seems a perfect solution to the problem.
Yeah. Like an HTTP auth type thing or something.
Mm. Yeah. The problem with it is someone has to issue those passwords. Someone has to be there on the other end of the phone for when you ring up and say, I've forgotten my password, can you reset it?
Nobody does that for Launchpad, though. You just request an email reminding you of your password and you get it.
Yeah. What about...
Yeah, that's because you request it and your email address is your login.
Mm.
Which means that I can't go and find out your password because it will go to your email address. I can go and type in your television license number and then it will say, where do you want us to send the password to? And I go, sal@cryogenics.org, please. And then not only have I got free access to all the BBC stuff on your TV license thing, but now you haven't because I've changed your password.
Thing is, Capita, the company who run TV licensing, have used call centres anyway to deal with people going, I can't pay it this month.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But that means that Capita are going to have to employ a load of new people and not get paid for it.
So
that would be a shame, but yes.
Well, why the hell would they? If I was supposed to run Capita, I'd say, "Why don't you eat shit?" Why should I do that?
But a point that was made earlier on, offline, was that we fucking paid for this content already.
Yes, right? We have. Absolutely,
we should have access to it. And in my mind, they make whatever steps are necessary to get access to that content in a way that can play on most platforms.
The BBC's argument is that they'd be quite happy to, if there was a way of saying everyone in the UK can have it and people outside the UK who have not paid for it can't, then they'd do it.
But there's
essentially no way of doing that. So you can either open it up to the whole world or you can say, we're going to close it off. So if people in the US
solves that problem.
It doesn't because it's not a workable solution.
How do you know it's not workable?
Because who's going to pay for the people to answer the phones?
The license fee.
The license fee.
At which point, so you're prepared to make the BBC worse in order to do this?
Yes.
That's an assumption that you can't find efficiency improvements and things like that.
By definition, if you've got a corporation which uses money, giving them less money makes them worse.
No, it doesn't. Right? That's bullshit.
If they can do the efficiency improvements, make it happen, they could do it now.
They could do, but they won't do because they're not managers. They're creative.
Oh, what bullshit! Honestly.
And all right, they're a bunch of left wingers who wouldn't know how to manage a way of a paper.
But then they're still not going to know it.
Anyway,
they're still not going to know it when you take away some of their money and you give it to Capita, a private enterprise.
You're basically saying that they can't afford it. That's it. And you have absolutely no idea about whether that's the case. If the BBC even looked at a system like this and said, okay, it's going to cost X amount of pounds, you know, this is not going to be workable, then fair enough. But my point is that there is already a really simple solution to this problem.
It's not a really... You think it's a really simple solution because you just think, oh, you just type in your number and then it works.
No, I'm not saying that. But basically, there's a unique identification number assigned to every person who has the right to watch BBC television, and that's the TV licence number.
Well, everybody pays for a licence, so yeah. Lynn pays for our... Well, Lynn's name is on the licence, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, I understand...
So can Matt access it on Lynn's licence
I understand number. That there's going to be problems. There's going to be things that would need to be figured out. It's obviously not as simple as just whacking a number in. I'm not saying that for a second, yeah. But the problem... Just because... To me, it seems crazy developing a whole new fucking technical solution to this problem when an existing way of doing things could be modified, essentially.
What really frustrates me about all of this is that back in the day, the BBC used to be a hive of innovation, right? The Doctor Who theme was the first bit of music that used entirely electronic instruments. It was, you know, the Radiophonic Workshop was basically invented a lot of musical synthesis techniques, right? Back in the old days, the BBC created specifications and designs for the ideal speaker to listen to radio and things like that. Now, instead, what they're doing is just rolling over and dying and saying, "Doesn't matter, we've taken your money, but only these people can watch it." Even in the very first days of television, there were two competing standards: John Logie Baird's one and the Marconi's TV, right? What they did was they ran Logie Baird television format 1 week, Marconi the next week, until...
A clear winner was...
Yeah. Okay. Hang on. And now what they're doing is they're basically saying only people with Sony TVs can watch TV now, is essentially what they're doing. They're giving up at the first hurdle.
Then let's explore your idea a bit, right? So when you say you've got... Let's imagine it works. We'll assume that the call centre stuff works or no one ever forgets their password or however you want to look at it, right? So you have a TV licence number and a password. How does that allow you to watch the television stuff and not people in America? Either you type it into the website and then they give you a completely unencumbered thing which you can then put on the internet, or... You wire it into players that you have to type that in. At which point, they've invented a new DRM system, which you said they couldn't do.
So we're assuming that it's going to be download, not streaming.
As far as I'm aware, it's download.
My assumption was streaming.
Right, you could insist on it being streaming.
My assumption was that we're talking about streaming content.
As I understand it, because they want to allow people to watch it on video iPods and that sort of thing. You know?
Yep.
They can't at the moment. But the idea is that Windows DRM not supported on the video iPod. But as I understand it, the intention is for downloads.
Yeah, I agree. It's a problem for downloads.
Yeah, and that's what they're planning on doing.
Because of the unique way the BBC is funded, right? They could even put it out to tender for an innovative small UK company to come up with a fucking DRM system. You know, I know that it's a reasonably big problem, but you know, you do get small innovative companies who specialize in niche areas of coding and development who I'm sure could come up with the system.
I mean, I ought to point out that the BBC Trust, or the people who run the BBC, have said, now whether you believe them or not is a different question, but they have said that using the Windows Media DRM is only a temporary solution while they look for something better. And they may well be putting it out to tender to some small innovative firm to write a cross-platform good DRM system.
Do you think things like this justify DRM? Because a lot of people will be listening to say, no, DRM's bad in all forms.
Just say no to DRM. I personally think that the BBC should say, this stuff has already been paid for, and just make it available. And if people in America watch it, so fucking what?
Yeah, I suppose the argument would be, though, that they would have to raise the license fee because they would lose revenue, presumably, from DVD sales and through selling stuff abroad.
Yeah.
And also, I
don't agree with you on the grounds that I don't think you're going to be able to download for nothing stuff they're putting on DVDs anyway. Things like...
So if you're going to be...
Things like Only Fools and Horses, which they sell millions of DVDs of every year, I don't reckon you're going to be able to go to the BBC site and download that. You're going to be able to go and download stuff that's on BBC television, but not necessarily things that they already think are commercial properties. That's the case.
All right. The Office, right? When that first came out, though, we'd never have guessed that would become the biggest selling television DVD in the UK, right? In history. Because it was low-key and nobody really thought much was going to happen with it.
Yeah.
It was in a graveyard slot on BBC Two. So imagine that was on now, and same situation, they didn't know what was going to happen with it. They would make that available to download as part of the catch-up. So you can't foresee what's going to be
commodity. But the point there, to some extent, is they're only going to make it available to download for the next 7 days. Which means
that means DRM, though.
If you're...
Because it'll expire after 7 days.
No. I don't mean that anyone who's already downloaded it will lose it. But if you're not aware of it within 7 days, that means that if anyone was on the ball enough to get the Office every go, yes, they got it for nothing and get to keep it and not buy a DVD. And yeah, they probably could put it on.
You know, another option. It's a slightly less
fucking
technical.
Tape it off the telly.
You can avoid buying an Office
Stop
DVD.
Stop being such a spod and fucking tape it.
You can avoid buying an Office DVD by taping it when it comes on. But if you didn't tape when it comes on, tough shit, you lost.
What about
you
which is why extras exist? DVD extras. Yes.
not the extras in Massage Palace.
Happy ending.
You're a wanker.
See, you have to bring the tone down. I was subtle.
Just to finish the point I was trying to make. I think just they should just go yourself off. Screw it. It's already been paid. It's already been paid for. Let it have it. And if people outside the UK watch it, whatever. We've already got the money for it. But they never get it through Parliament. Never in a million years.
Yeah, I mean,
the whole Conservative Party are against it.
When
it came up in discussion before, there was a massive block vote from the Conservative Party saying you can't do that because that's our tax money and Americans shouldn't benefit from it, basically.
There is another option.
Well, I mean,
Speaking as a Conservative.
No, speaking as Matthew Revell, I don't agree with everything they say.
Such as their manifesto.
I just don't want the BBC to put up our licence fee. Because they bring in, it's something ridiculous, like one or two. It is something, it's either hundreds of millions or getting on for a billion, which would be hundreds of millions, in revenue each year from BBC Worldwide, which is people who do things as diverse as publishing the Radio Times to selling DVDs all of that.
But I can't see why they couldn't say, you can download it for 7 days afterwards in a completely unencumbered file. Let's say they pick Theora for the sake of argument. They're not going to, but say they do. They'll do DRAG, probably. But say they go, okay, for 7 days after a TV program's on, you can download it in Og Theora format. After that, we take it away and you can't download it anymore. That, to my mind, would be fine. And you say you're not allowed to redistribute this. It's not going to stop pirates, but it doesn't stop pirates now.
It's a complex issue as well, because...
And also... Sorry.
I was going to say it's a complex issue as well, because I can see some value in what Ak's saying about, you know, essentially it's been paid for. I can see some value, but then there's things like, well,
the part of the way it's paid for
is it right to say, you know, the assumption here seems to be if we're paying for the paying the license fee, essentially we are the British people or anyone who pays a license fee are owners of that content. But what happened, you know, I mean, I've been paying a license fee pretty much since I was about 18, and you know, before then, does that mean that I don't have access to old content? I mean, what about things like, you know, like Fawlty Towers or Only Fools and Horses that were filmed in the mid 80s or the early 80s.
I wasn't
paying a license fee back
they're
then.
They're bad examples because they're commercial properties, but they're already selling DVDs of those.
No, yes, but as far
as I'm concerned, to me, the fact that the BBC sells DVDs with that content on that's already being purchased by the British people, to me, is unfair.
Yes, but the point is, and I would feel like that, unless I took into account the fact that our license fee would go up if it wasn't for all those sales. And it would go almost double from what I understand. Yeah. So that is quite a big thing.
Yeah.
But
there's basically no alternative to that. I mean, yes, you might say it's unfair that they sell DVDs, but the alternative is they leave it in their private library and nobody at all sees it. Because
why don't they charge for the cost of the DVD?
Yeah, okay, they could do that.
Yeah, yes. And then you've got the cost of distribution as well and everything like that.
I don't know. If you go into a shop and buy a Fawlty Towers DVD and it costs, say, 13 quid.
About a quid of that goes back to the right.
I've got no idea how much of that is profit. Yeah, whether that DVD costs the BBC 10 quid to get it to you and then they take £3 off.
In general, if you buy a CD or a DVD, about a quid goes back to the rights holder. But, as I understand it. So anyway...
So they're not making that much of a profit anyway. If they said, okay, we'll charge you the cost of the DVD, instead of paying £13, you pay £12.
I'm pretty sure that out of the cost of a £10 DVD, there's a lot of profit going somewhere.
50% of it is retail markup straight off.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Between 30 and 50%, but that's not the BBC's fault. If the BBC said, we'll charge you the price of the DVD, i.e. we won't take...
Between 30 and 50% is retail markup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
30% on books and magazines, 50% on anything like a DVD or anything like that, or a bottle of beer or whatever.
So you're telling me that the unit sale price for a £10 DVD is £5 from the BBC?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Or from the distributor.
I wouldn't have thought it's that much. I don't know that for sure.
As someone who has gone through quite a lot of pain trying to set up a shop, a retail business,
I can tell you,
margins are about 50% in general. Yeah. Unless you're talking like magazines and books.
There's a lot of pain and agony in the book business.
But that's still a shitload of profit, isn't it, from the BBC sort of side?
Yeah. Margin, no. Not profit, yeah. Margin.
Margin.
But okay, anyway, ignoring that, I think they should open it up.
Yeah.
Just no DOM, just open it. But I can't see for a minute that they get it through Parliament, at which point nothing happens.
One final point is that it's largely out of the BBC's hands anyway these days, because they might say, all right, EastEnders, yeah, we'll make that completely freely available, no problem. But the problem it comes with that they're legally obliged to put 25% of their production work out to the independent sector. And the independent sector these days are increasingly keen to retain the rights to what they sell. So these days, a lot of the time, you won't see copyright Channel 4, blah, blah, or copyright BBC. You'll see copyright Shared Productions or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means that they've basically given the right to the BBC to show it, but not anything else.
But not any other rights. That's
where a lot of the problem is.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something which said that the BBC, you know, they quite like the idea internally of just going, screw it, here's our archive, there you go. But they basically have to go back and clear rights to do that. And with everybody in every show, God, and it's basically impossible.
That'd be as bad as GPL3ing something.
When I was at uni, one of my lecturers got £1,800 check every now and then because he directed a few episodes of Grange Hill and they were repeating at the time.
So yeah, BBC people, write in and tell us why we're wrong. And that you are about to open up. I was so excited by the idea of the BBC Creative Archive. And I thought, brilliant, they'll just make everything available. And it seems like they're inching towards it, but because they're the BBC, they are only inching towards it.
Huge
but moment. It's more than anyone else is doing. Channel 4 do Channel 4 on demand, and as far as I can tell, couldn't give a shit about Linux people. Nothing from ITV at all.
They're all coming together to do Project Kangaroo, aren't they? Which is going to be the new cross-channel player, which is going to be the commercial sector's response to the iPlayer.
Right, okay.
Anyway, finally, it's subjects on log radio I care about.
You're not even on the show anymore.
Check it out, here I am.
This week,
Jono are mostly been playing with.
Oh, I've mostly been playing with UPNP.
Yao PNP.
Now, what's
Yao PNP?
What's Yao PNP?
Now, I'm not entirely sure. I know a little bit about it. So talk
about what you've been using it for.
Right. I work from home, and I have about 26, 27 gigabytes of music on my laptop. As many people know, I rather enjoy heavy music. And
you've got all the CDs.
Like to listen to, of course. They're all boxed up and in the loft.
Right, yeah.
I listen to my music. I listen to my music, and it's through shitty laptop speakers. So I was thinking, what would be great is if I could stream them over the network to my PlayStation 3, which is plugged into the surround sound speakers,
right.
And then I could listen to them while I'm there.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out that the PlayStation 3 supports something called the DNLA, I think it is. It's not the people who hand out driving licenses.
Do not resuscitate.
This is like an alternative to Apple's iTunes thing, which is called DAP. It does a similar kind of thing.
I think so.
Oh, share and share.
And from what I can tell, the underlying mechanism is something called UPNP, which is Universal Plug and Play or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was
unplugged plug and play.
it's some kind
it's
of networking
protocol,
thing.
Isn't it?
Well, it was originally used so your device could negotiate with your firewall to automatically
open
a port or whatever.
Yeah,
they've then built loads of stuff on top of it, and the thing that's used is the UPNP media stack.
Well,
yeah, I mean, the technical network detail is not the point.
When I first heard about this, I read on Schaller's blog that the PlayStation 3 supported something to do with media streaming, so I asked him about it and said, yeah, what you need to do is you need to, it supports this thing called UPNP, you need to set up a UPNP server on your laptop, and then it'll stream the content over. So I thought, okay.
Oh, cool.
So I spoke to Chris Jones, who's one of the sysadmins at Canonical. Mm. that's his nickname before anyone wonders why we both went. Mm.
It's
NG, yeah. Anyway, said that, you need, there's a thing called MediaTomb, which you lock your meter into, which is basically, I think it's written in Raw, Ruby on Rails.
Yeah.
It's a world of Rawcraft.
World of Bumcraft.
World of Bumcraft. And, God, this is full of in-jokes, isn't it? Anyway, I set up this media team thing, and it completely failed to stream any media whatsoever.
Elsa, please.
Now, we actually tried recording this segment on the last show, and and it just died every time. And Abe made the valid point that the reason why this probably didn't work is because, I think, how did he delicately put it? I think it was something along the lines of, your network's fucked, Bacon. which it is. So I don't know whether there's a problem, but it's really hard to set this kind of stuff up. And all I want to do is stream. I want to stream a lot of content in my house because I want my laptop to have all my music on it. And I spend a lot of time in my studio drumming, and I want to drum along with albums, and so I wanted to stream it to the studio computer, which is a Mac.
Right, right.
But then I want to stream it to my PlayStation 3 when I'm listening, when I'm sat in the living
now,
room.
Have you heard of Slim P3?
Slim P3.
Slim P3.
Right. It's got Mick Hucknall in it.
No, it's basically, I can't remember what they call them, but they're Slim P3 is the server software, and you buy this box that's got a remote control.
Is
with it.
Is it like the Sling Box?
Kinda,
right,
but not
okay.
Really.
Right.
But what's it called? Anyway. You stream your your music to this box over your network. There's a Wi-Fi version and a non-Wi-Fi version, and you hook it up to your stereo.
What's the difference between the Wi-Fi and the non-Wi-Fi?
One's just got an anyway,
right.
You can just buy one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably, you can already stream your music from your laptop to the Mac.
Yeah,
because you use DAP.
And that's
great. What you want is either Rhythmbox to support DAP or something like this MediaTomb thing to support DAP.
Well, this is what I was thinking. I mean, I wrote a little blog. I totally blogged it.
So this MediaTomb thing to work.
I'd like to be able to essentially stream content from my application. I'd like to just load up Rhythmbox and be able to stream it across to my PlayStation 3.
Seriously, have a look at Slim P3 because it's written in Python. It's GPL.
Oh, right.
And it streams. It's designed for streaming music, MP3s primarily, blogs as well.
Right.
Across your home network.
I mean, that's
but
the
then,
kind of.
But then presumably you won't be able to stream it to the MP to your PlayStation 3. You'll just have to stream it to a magic Slim P3 box that plugs into the television
or a TV or a computer. I mean,
yeah, but you'll have to buy something. You can't. You need this UPnP support. I mean, Aid's point, I think.
Unless Slim P3 uses a UPnP.
Born out by something I did, which was I've got a laptop plugged into my television, and I use it to stream television across the network, shows that I've recorded, whatever. And it didn't work. I could never get it to work properly. I kept getting dropouts and everything. And it turned out it was because my network was fucked. I had two 10-base T hubs, and I got rid of them and got one 100-base T switch, and now it works perfectly. So it wouldn't surprise me if somebody's to do with the fact that you've got a shag network.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I completely accept that. And Aid was like, yeah, all you need to do is masquerade your NAT and transmit your
Aid
packets.
Yeah, Aid talked a lot about
Yeah, all you need to do is fire up fucking Ethereal and analyse some packets.
Individually look at all the TCP packets where I've got the problem is.
So I'm going to do that. Yeah.
I mean,
beard.
Ignoring that, if you if you just booted your network in the arse and bought a couple of new bits of gear that work, then I suspect you'd be a lot better off. Because I can't imagine the MediaTomb people have gone, here's MediaTomb. It doesn't work, by the way. You know,
well,
it must work for some people.
It's funny, because I read a lot of people on the internet, there's a lot of people on the internet, saying saying that they've had serious problems, and a lot of people can't get it working specifically with the PS3, but then Chris Jones got it working perfectly with the PS3. And
yeah,
but
he's
a sysadmin, and he's going to have a fucking perfectly set up network.
Something worth looking at. Report back on whether you get it working.
A Linksys router or something.
Because
you've got like loads of dodgy stuff.
Well, I've got an Apple router, an Apple wireless access point in which I've forgotten the password. Well, I say I've forgotten the password. I was never given the password because I was given it from OpenAdvantage.
Right.
And I've reset it, factory reset it loads of times, and I've read loads of manuals for the damn thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work, so I think
Wireless access point is like £5.
Yeah, I know.
They're not quite that cheap.
eBay.
Oh.
Yeah.
On the show this week, Ian Murdoch.
Hello, Ian.
From Sun. We spoke to Ian a little while ago. So, Ian, tell us what you've been up to very recently.
Well, I've been up to quite a bit. I don't suspect you've heard of Project Indiana.
No, it's never crossed our news feeds at any point at all, never. And emails from Patrick Finch.
So,
tell us about it.
Yeah, so I think when I was on the show last time, I talked sort of generally about what I thought I'd be doing, and it was maybe a few weeks into my tenure, and things have accelerated quite a bit. Essentially what we have now is a project within the Open Solaris community called Project Indiana. The basic goal of Project Indiana is to make a binary distribution of Open Solaris. So, you know, basically one of the things that we need to do is make Open Solaris more tangible and more relatable to people who are used to thinking about Linux distributions.
Yeah.
And so the first step is simply to a lot of people hear the name Open Solaris and they think, oh, that's an operating system. It's the community version of Solaris, and that's what I want if I want the latest features, and I'm going to go download it. And they, you know, they get to the opensolaris.org site and they realize it's not quite the way they think it should be.
Right? No.
So you know, I think I talked a lot about familiarity and making Solaris more familiar to people who know Linux. That's familiarity feature number one. That is just simply putting Solaris on more of a familiar release train to people coming from Linux. And then, of course, we're looking at a whole lot of technological features as well along those same lines. Open Solaris, the binary distribution, will have a package system. It will have a whole bunch of other things that people coming from Linux would expect in a modern distribution. And we are working all of this out in real time in the Open Solaris community.
Excellent stuff. So how are you finding Sun? Are you enjoying it there?
Oh, I'm having a ball.
Honestly?
Honestly. I've always been a big thinker, right? But I've always worked at startups, and so right. You know, it was always like being having all sorts of big ideas, but never having any resources to go off and do them. And Sun, of course, is a big company. There are plenty of resources and a lot of great stuff to start with. And not just operating systems, but everything from hardware up to cloud platform technology, that kind of thing. So there's really interesting possibilities for integrating all of them together and doing some really interesting and different things.
Cool stuff.
Okay, so the work you're doing to try and make Open Solaris more familiar and that kind of thing, who's it designed to appeal to? I mean, is it designed to appeal to people like us, who are Linux users? Or are you going after the Windows market or the corporate desktop market or what?
Well, so I think the goal is to sort of bring things full circle, right? 10-15 years ago, the developer platform of choice was Solaris. If you went through a computer science program during that time, you probably had a Sun workstation. And, you know, at some point, Sun took its eye off the ball, right? As Jonathan has said, when you've got fish jumping in the boat, you think about how to make a bigger boat, not about where you're headed.
Yeah.
And during that time, of course, the world changed quite a bit. Linux happened, and consequently, a lot of people came out of colleges and universities knowing Linux far better than they knew Solaris. So basically what we're trying to do is simply reach that lost generation of people who were basically born and raised on Linux, and to them Linux is Unix. Well, actually Solaris is Unix, right? And it has some very, very interesting technology if we can bridge this gap, and that's all that's what Project Indiana is all about at the end of the day.
Okay, I mean, slightly stupid question here, but you know, Linux open source operating system, Solaris open source operating system, should we not be trying to grow the market, the number of users of
of open source and the free desktop, rather than Solaris trying to steal Linux users, Linux trying to not lose the users to Solaris? Should you not be going after Mac people or Windows people or whatever?
Well, I never said that we're trying to steal Linux people.
You said you were trying to appeal to the sort of people who are currently thinking that Linux is the only Unix.
Well, okay, so so in one sense, yes, we are competing, right? And we're trying to get back a market that we lost. In another sense, it's not a zero-sum game, right? We are participating in the growth of the open-source platform, and you know, by doing so, all boats are going to rise, including ours, we hope, and Red Hat's and everybody else.
Yeah.
Right. So, is it sort of in Sun's business interest to, you know, compete with Windows by building a better desktop? You know, not really. I mean, Sun's about network infrastructure, and network infrastructure is largely powered by Unix. Right. So that's why we are interested in Unix. It's just the alignment with Sun's business interests.
Cool.
We're not trying to make the world a better place. It just happens to be a nice side effect of what we're doing.
Okay.
Cool. Nice one. On a slightly different note, I noticed recently that Sun have produced, I think, a 460 teraflop supercomputer, and IBM have just produced a 1 petaflop supercomputer. Do you ever get to go near huge monstrosities like that? And if so, what the hell are they for? What do people like to do with them?
I don't know, but I would guess it has something to do with porn.
Well, thanks very much, Ian. It's been great to talk to you.
Okay.
We look forward to maybe speaking to you another time again.
Definitely.
Okay, look forward to it as well.
Cheers!
Thanks so much.
Bye. All right.
I have a story to tell.
Tell
the story. So, let me think. Okay, a while back, I was thinking about putting some ads on my website. says he makes more money on ads than I. What's the web address for your thing?
www.understated.co.uk.
Excellent.
Or dogsfall.com.
Go there and click on away. Matt's ads, which is against Google policy. So don't click on Matt's ads.
Please do click on that.
As we'll see in a second. Anyway, I thought about ads, and I looked at Google Ads, and it's really easy to put ads on your website. Oh, yeah. And I thought a couple of smallish ads that aren't too intrusive and relevant to the content, I don't really have a problem with that. Mm. So I went to Google Ads, signed up, stuck some ads on, left it on there for about 3 days, no one clicked on them, so I'd remove them. And then about 2 months later, I was thinking, you know, I'm gonna go and give this another go again. And then I went back into Google Ads, and there was like $6 in there. So that obviously people had clicked on the ads, but it hadn't appeared in the reports thing. I was thinking, ah, oh, nice. So I put the ads on the website. Anyway, I wrote an article about the ethics of ads. I've got this regular weekly thing called the Opinion Slab that I do. And I wrote this thing about the ethics of ads.
Just right.
Loads of people responded with loads of interesting viewpoints on the discussion. Anyway, I get an email from Google, I think it was a week ago, from them saying, this breaks our policy.
Really? Wow.
And they referenced that page.
That's interesting that they got someone sitting there
checking out on this.
Now, the thing that sent me the email seemed automated. So yeah. And they said, if you don't remove this or adjust it in the next 3 days, we're going to remove ads from your website.
You probably find you had a thing saying, I put these ads on and I didn't know whether people would click on the ads or not. And they've got the Google search bot running going, okay, are there any pages with click on the ads on the page?
That's what I was thinking. So I replied to this email and I said, this blog entry was a discussion about ads. Mm. It wasn't encouraging anybody to click on the ads. And anyway, I got a response back, and it turns out that what their objection was that on the sidebar where I've got it, I have little sections on johnobacon.org,
right.
And the section I put pay in the bills, and then put the ads underneath
like that.
Which to me is like
an inducement to people to click on the ads.
The only reason why I'm having the ads is to pay for the fucking bills, you know? And because I did put on there a little bit saying, if you find these ads useful or interesting, click on them because it helps the ring of johnobacon.org. And someone said that could break the policy, so I changed it and literally just had the ads on there. So anyway, they don't like the concept of the words paying the bills. So I thought, okay, I'll change it. So I changed it to evil ads. And now the ads have gone.
Ah, there you go, you see.
So, did Google have a problem with me referring to evil ads?
I suspect so. To be honest with you,
I mean, for fuck's sake.
I think the point is that you're supposed to put them on there and basically make no reference to them at all.
That is,
you essentially pretend they're not there.
Yeah. Right.
If you make any reference to them at all, then you're drawing people's attention to them or whatever. And whether you're saying they're good or saying they're bad, if you're saying anything about the ads, then
I find it crazy though that putting the reason why you've got the, like, saying paying the bills. I don't see anything
that would entice people to click on them, and who may not otherwise click on them because they're just genuinely interested in them, which then makes them less useful. No,
I can kind of see that. I can see that.
I mean, I think there's...
But if I put evil ads, then no one will click them.
Essentially, I mean, I assume that you'd...
Well, I don't want
you'd agree that putting ads up there and putting a great big flashing red arrow which says, if you're here, please click on these, it'd be really important, would be bad. Yeah?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And having ads and not mentioning them at all would be fine.
Yes.
So there's got to be a dividing line somewhere
between
those two.
I agree.
Probably a little bit over the line.
I agree.
And then you decided to take the piss, and they decided, we're having none of that from this lippy-bearded twat in the UK. None of that. Turn the ads.
But surely evil ads would dissuade people from clicking on the ads.
Yeah, they don't want that, though, do they?
She spent all that time being
natural. They want people to click on them because they feel enticed by the ads. But, I mean, it is a bit concerning, though, that you're left with the situation now where we have pretty much a monopoly supplier for that kind of advert, for that size of website. You're left without the ability to have advertising.
We do. I mean, John and I had a discussion about this. Now, I used to have, and I posted about this on my site and got lots of comments on it, a kind of an ethical objection to the idea of ads at all, just getting money from the site. And people said to me, what's your reason for this objection? I said, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right, and the love of money is the root of all evil.
Do you feel bad about going to work and getting paid for that then?
And these are all the arguments people made, and I eventually thought, well, yeah, okay, I haven't got a reason for this. Why not? Let's have a crack at it. But I didn't want to use Google Ads because I've got a certain amount of sympathy with the underdog. So I thought, I'll have a look around and see what else there is. And as far as I can tell, there ain't much.
Unless you want to get into affiliate schemes like DoubleClick.
Yeah.
Or which is owned by Google now.
Yeah, which are now owned by Google. Or Amazon Associates, apparently.
Amazon Associates is pretty cool.
Looking at, the Yahoo Publisher Network doesn't work outside the US, which annoyed me a bit. And I eventually started up with this firm called Project Wonderful, who do a different kind of a scheme. The way you say, here's a space on my site, and then people bid for it.
And are they wonderful?
And they are not wonderful. They took 3 weeks.
Much my surprise.
They took 3 weeks just to give me an account. So I've sat there and thought, well, just whatever, dudes.
There's a reason Google's successful.
Yeah, I mean, It does lead you to believe that Google are not, everyone's not just gone with Google Ads because, you know, you have to go with Google because Google are the people for everything. They've actually put together quite a good scheme.
I mean, nobody really allowed you to easily and automatically sign up for fairly unobtrusive advertising on your website if you were of our level.
No, you could do
if
you
guys
were
get more traffic than I do.
CNN.com.
Yeah.
But you can't do it if you're us. That's where Google got in there. And it does seem quite... So I'm probably going to end up signing up with Google Ads. Sorry, people. Although my intention is to show them on pages that tend to get hit by search engines. Old blog posts, JavaScript stuff, that sort of thing.
If people really object to ads, then they can always install the Adblock
extension. Yeah.
But I find that, most of my click-throughs come through from people who... I get a lot of traffic from people searching for Virgin Media because I've blogged about Virgin Media a couple of times. And on the Dogs Rule site, I get a lot about the Dog Borsal, which is a TV series on BBC Three. And people click on those because they've come to the site randomly through Google searches. And they don't really give a shit about my website. They've read the thing, they saw an advert, and they click on it. So, yeah, sticking it on highly searched or...
That's basically the intention. But I don't want to get too much into the ethics of ads. I just think it's interesting that the technical implementation of them all, that there's very little, if you're in the UK, that you can do.
Yeah.
And you, Bacon, are now basically shit out of luck. No money for you from your website.
To be honest with you, I could probably remove the evil ads bit and they'd give me the ads back. But I'm not impressed at all.
No, I can understand that. Absolutely.
I'm not impressed with Google at all with this regard. Hey? Yeah.
I mean, the thing I thought was, I looked at the Google Ads thing, and I'd like the money to be paid into PayPal. And I was searching around for, you can't do it. And I assume a lot of it's because PayPal are a Google competitor. you know, compared to Google Checkout and all this. Mm. But I was searching around to see whether anyone had worked out a way to make it happen, and I saw a discussion on a forum about it, and there was a bloke there who said, well, why do you want it paid into PayPal? Yes. You know, it's much better to just have it paid into your account, and then you don't pay the PayPal fees. And the bloke who originally posted the question posted the exact answer I would have posted, which is that PayPal's like a Swiss bank account as far as the wife's concerned.
Really?
Oh, and right. I thought, that's why I want it. Because if it goes into PayPal, then I can use it for eBay money. If it goes into my account, I'll pay the council tax with it.
One easy solution to this problem. Fix the marriage.
Easy.
To be fairly clear about this, both myself and my wife use the PayPal account for eBay. But if it comes into the real account, we'll just pay bills with it. Whereas if it goes into PayPal, we can pretend it's not real money and spend it on cool stuff on eBay.
Marriage is not a word. What is it? It's a sentence.
You know, though, that you could easily just sort of transfer the money into the PayPal account as soon as it is your bank account.
Yeah, that's not how it works, though, is it?
My heck, it's fucked!
It's fucked!
It is fucked.
So, anyway, this is a new segment which Jono the Bacon Master thought of, in which we talk about things that aren't working in Linux.
You got to love the way it's a new segment in the last show of the series, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's the penultimate show of the series.
Yeah, but Lagwell Live doesn't count.
Yes, it fucking does.
It's the end of the show.
Moving on.
So, anyway.
There's some things that are clearly fooks.
Yeah, and I don't think I should start this segment, really. Okay. Because
yeah, no, I mean,
that'll be an anticlimax at the beginning.
Right.
We don't want to bitch about wireless drivers or video drivers at the moment, because we talked about them loads and yeah, they're completely food for everybody. So moving on.
I've got one.
Baconio.
Go for it.
Speak of a fooked thing.
Now, it's getting better, right? It's getting a lot better in recent times, but it's still, in my mind, fooked! And that's Bluetooth in Linux. Now,
Blautelf.
Fucking Blautelf.
Can it pop? Can it blow pop?
The problem with Bluetooth... Right, there's two things I want to do with Bluetooth, okay?
Take your sexy pictures off your phone.
Well, no, there's three things I want to do with Bluetooth. One is take my sexy pictures off my phone. The second thing, which is the key thing for me, is I want to connect to the internet via my phone.
That would be
over
good.
Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And the third thing is I want to be able to switch presentation slides with Bluetooth, with my phone. Okay? Now...
Oh, right. What? Right, that'd be cool.
Now, the main thing is the modem. So, I was on the train coming back from London today, and I wanted to log on, and I couldn't remember how to do it. I remembered most of the steps about how to do it. It's a pain in the arse, and I know a good friend of mine is Marcel Holtman, who works on the Bluetooth stuff, and I know Bastian Nacera has been working on a bunch of things as well for GNOME, yeah, but it's still a mighty pain in the arse.
Bear in mind that there are two stages you need to go through to get this kind of shit working. There's actual support for it in some way on Linux, and then there's integrating it into the desktop, so it's
that's
easy.
The thing.
Now, the first stage is basically done. You already can control your phone, control your presentations with Bluetooth, because until I got a Bluetooth presenter, I spent 2 years doing it.
Yeah.
And you only need to type one line into a shell.
Yeah, but the point is there needs
what
to be an easy...
Until you got a Bluetooth presenter, what?
Sorry, until I got a separate presenter thing which plugs into USB and turns to be a USB mouse.
And incidentally, you're a fucking liar. You haven't been using your phone doing that.
I have.
Doing it for 2 years.
I have.
You were setting up for the first time when we went and spoke in
No, I wasn't. I'd done it before. Well, when we went up to do the Jocosha Solar System presentation, that was the new thing. This is USB. That's not Bluetooth at all.
Is it?
Yeah. That thing I've got is USB.
Because you basically broke Bluetooth in my laptop when you did that.
Wasn't me, Governor.
Isn't there a K Bluetools or something?
There's some stuff in KDE. But most of this stuff actually exists. You can connect to the phone.
I know, but my point is that it's hard to set this shit up.
It's not integrated into the desktop. It's all hunt around the internet, find two or three commands, type them into a shell. That's specifically what's fooked. Bill and I actually wrote a little applet that sits up in the notification area. Every time a phone turns up, a little phone icon appears, and you could click on it and say, dial the internet with this phone. We could never get it working properly. It was going to be brilliant.
My machines turn everything into gold. It was going to be brilliant.
But then we found
my software will run little widgets on the screen.
But how do you connect to the internet? You have to fire up WVDial as root under the covers, and then if it crashes, then you just lose and everything. So we never really got it working very well.
You've
got
to set up PPP scripts and all that shit.
Exactly. You see, that sort of thing's a pain.
This is what I mean.
I want someone like Bastian Nocera to go and fix it because he's better at it than me.
So that's what I think's fooked. I'd like to see that fixed.
It is fooked. rude. Because if you've got a decent Bluetooth subsystem in place, you can do all kinds of cool things, like have your laptop unlock when you walk up to it, and unlock again when you walk away from it.
I'd like to see like a Bluetooth subsystem and then little plugins for different types of things you can do. So you'd have a little plugin for that, or a little plugin to access your phone via the modem. And what I'd like to see is maybe, I don't know if it's possible, but pre-configuration for various different phones as well. In the same way that with printer drivers, you can do that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
But yeah, anyway, moving on.
Yep, I'd love to see that. The thing I think is fucked is sharing files around your network. I've mentioned before I've got a laptop plugged into the TV and I want to be able to share files across the network with it.
Yeah.
I want to be able to pick up files from my laptop downstairs or from... This is between Linux machines. I'm not ignoring trying to share a Windows or whatever, at which point you're basically stuck with Samba. I wanted to share files between Linux machines on my network.
So and you basically want to transfer porn around between different machines?
No, I don't want to transfer porn around.
Sorry, Top Gear episodes.
Top Gear episodes, perhaps.
Which is porn,
all perfectly legally downloaded off the internet, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Or tapes using your PVR solution on your laptop.
Absolutely. Moving on.
And it's gone free graphics card.
Moving on. Shut up.
Hey, you give me a kicking whenever I use something non-free.
I'm using free drivers.
Anyway, moving on. Moving. You told me there's something non-free on that laptop.
There isn't any more. Oh, on the laptop plugged into the telly?
Yeah.
Yeah, non-free NVIDIA drivers.
What did I just say? Yes.
Right, okay, so I thought you meant my laptop. Anyway, moving on.
How's that not your laptop?
I want to be able to share files around my network. And as far as I can tell, there are only three ways of doing it. There's Samba, which is annoying because you have to set up separate users for it.
NFS and iFolder.
NFS, which is annoying because users on different machines have to have the same user ID to log in across NFS. That's why they invented NIS as a user synchronization thing. So they're both annoying to set up.
Right.
Right. And there's a thing called GNOME User Share, which is brilliant, where you get a public folder. And then you just drag things into the public folder. And Aquarius's public files on Giles appears on other machines in my network.
Isn't this something that should have been fixed a long time ago?
GNOME User Share is fantastic. But because it's using Apache under the covers, you can't... when you say to Totem, play a file that's on this share, it basically treats it as a stream, so you can't seek in it.
Right.
Which is fine if what you're doing is copying files around, but it's no bloody good if you're watching a video because you can't rewind.
So,
or fast forward, really annoying.
Why hasn't this been fixed already?
I just want it to be easy. I want to be able to say, my home directory, make it available. I mean, I appreciate that there are all kinds of security problems with it if you're doing it on the internet and stuff, but I don't care. On my home network, I want to be able to say, I just want a ticker box which says, make my files available. I don't care about the security. Right. And then all the other
people some people have just exploded right
well,
now.
Well, they have, absolutely.
Aid would have exploded.
I don't want to be able to tick a box on the other machines which says, read those files, I don't care about the security, and just fucking work. You know, just work. It should be easier and it isn't. That's fucked, that is.
You seem vexed.
He does seem vexed, doesn't he?
I am vexed about it. It should be easier. Matthew P. Revell.
Well,
what do you think's fucked, Revell?
Not a lot's fucked for me. I mean, I have actually thought of something. But in general, my day-to-day life of just sitting down, doing my work and whatever.
Tux teaches typing is everything is working well then. Oh,
yeah. cool bubbles, whatever it's called. Frozen bubble
frozen
works.
Bubble.
Cool bubbles.
Tetrix works. Free cell patience works. No, I mean, I basically use gedit. I use Firefox and I use Thunderbird. And that is about all I use in my work. In my normal...
And they all work fine.
Yeah, fine.
I'm the same. Pretty much everything works.
I must confess, everything that I need to do, I basically don't have a problem with.
The only thing that's...
Video drivers is a problem when I go to conferences.
Right. Well, the only thing that's fucked for me is I've got one of these shitty Motorola phones. And it's that shitty because every time I look at it, it seems to turn itself off. There seems to be a loose connection
that's
somewhere.
That's a useful feature.
Yeah.
They probably call it Moto Switch Off TM or something.
Hello, Moto.
Oh, no, fuck it, does
goodbye,
it?
Moto. Shut off.
Or in this thing,
hello, Moto.
Hello, Moto.
Hello, Moto.
How are you doing, Moto?
And then a brass band kicks in the background. And...
anyway, if I could drag your attention back to...
You know, when I were a radio producer, because Motorola started off making car radios.
Is that right?
Yeah, Motorola. Anyway, whatever.
Ah.
Yeah.
You've got a Motorola phone.
So yeah, so right. But it's got an USB port on it, right?
An USB port.
Which
sounds like a cricketer.
Yeah. Hey, mom, my name's USB port. Anyway, right, so, right? The yep. thing is, it's got a USB port, so you think you'd be able to plug it in and it would just turn up as a drive, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But no, it doesn't. It has to have special drivers. So it's not Linux's fault. It's the Motorola phone's fault. And some dude's, like, written a system for it which doesn't work.
Very useful.
I think it probably works.
I can write one of those as well. Probably 10 print app is great, 20 go to 10. It's not brilliant Motorola driver, but that, you know.
You've already told us about a system that you've written that doesn't work today. So anyway.
My Bluetooth thing doesn't work to help your USB port either.
So yeah, so it's really annoying because...
It also doesn't work as a UPnP server for media too.
Fuck. Because I can't access like the photos on my phone and stuff like that.
Right.
It's weird that they...
But then I plugged it in on the Windows laptop, which was maintained just to see what the competition are doing.
Is that right?
Yeah. And that even using the official Motorola drivers...
What, you mean the Microsoft Launchpad equivalent?
It's... It is weird that they don't... most phones with USB ports... tend to just make their phone appear as a mass storage device. I mean, mine does. My Nokia phone.
Yeah.
It pops up a little thing which says, would you like to do this as a data connection or pretend to be a drive? And I would say, pretend to be a drive so I can copy things onto the phone, MP3s and whatnot.
Yeah,
I've never even plugged it in because I just thought, it ain't going to work.
It works fine. All the Nokia phones, it's just a USB hard drive. Works perfectly.
Yeah, whereas Motorola... As
Motorola are a bit
it.
Weird they about this weird. Kind of thing. Sometimes you can type a magic code into the phone to make it pay attention to this kind of thing. Samsung phones are like that.
You know, I discovered some of these magic codes.
They're brilliant. There's millions of them.
What?
There's all these magic codes that can do things.
You type in, I mean, there are a few standard ones. You type in sort of *9131 *1*1, and then it gives you IMEI number or your phone number or whatever.
Yeah, those standard GSM SIM commands.
But every phone also implements a load of its own ones, and certainly Samsung phones. When I was looking to buy a new phone, a bloke at work's got a Samsung phone, and we were looking at, and you could theoretically type a code into that to make it pretend to be a USB hard drive.
Oh, right.
So you might find if you do a bit of research,
Google search,
it might be possible to do it.
Other searches are available. I suppose the other thing is that I could just buy a phone that doesn't ask around.
That isn't shit, yeah. I mean, it is, to some extent, reassuring to me, sitting here at the end of our fourth series, that now, when we say, that's fook, that is, we're down to, I can't dial the internet over Bluetooth from my Linux laptop.
It'd be nice, though, to be able to stick one of those 3G cards in. I bet they don't work.
I don't know. Pat Finch asked me that the other day, and I said, I don't know. Bet it doesn't. But, you know, I mean, four series ago, we'd have been saying, yeah, what doesn't work is the keyboard. And now what doesn't work is Bluetooth, which is nice.
No, I'll tell you what we'd have said. No, I can't say that on there. My, how things change around here. Apparently now the emails are done in their own segment, so there you go.
It's all change.
No, I'll kick off then.
You always did.
Thanks a lot. We've got an email from David M. Petronis. I know that name from somewhere.
Right.
He says, in his opinion, the latest release of Debian, Etch, is quite a change from the previous incarnation. He says quite a lot of things, but basically what he's saying is he thinks it's a conservative and stable, all controversial, version of Ubuntu Feisty. One thing that's particularly pleasing is a great deal of multimedia capability is automatically configured, and also it seems better integrated than Ubuntu. But he says certainly some things are missed, such as the out-of-box support for mounting and reading forum partitions. So he says, love from the land of Bert and Ernie, David. Redbeard.
I now have a conference laptop, which I intend to install Debian on to try it out.
What do you mean you've got a conference laptop? Is it like a conference pair?
No, it's a laptop I need to take to conferences. I don't want to take my laptop because A, it's too big, B, the wireless isn't supported, and C, the video card isn't
supported. Don't you go to like two conferences a year, though? Is that just a laptop that's going to be sat gathering dust?
Well, what's the alternative? I go to conference. When I do go to conferences, I can't present.
Get over yourself and like just install the non-free.
Get over yourself is the option.
You're right. That's what I should do. I should just fucking sell out entirely. Yeah. No.
Because
why do the two of you fuck off?
Okay. So of course, you're going to stop using that Nvidia graphics driver on that laptop.
That's not his laptop. That's the one on the
telly. Oh, that's not selling out. Okay, sorry, I'm mistaken. We've had an email from Hello there, Ken Fallon.
Hello, Ken.
Now, Ken's going to get some special treatment now, because I'm not only going to read out a little bit of an email, but we're also going to play a voicemail.
We'll play a voicemail from Ken, yes.
Yeah, so this is what Ken wrote to us. I don't know if this came after the voicemail. Oh, no. He says, hello, lads. That wasn't me and a voicemail at all, bejesus. He actually says that as well. not now, piggy. Anyway, I nearly wet myself when I heard I had won the quiz. I'm going to stop talking like that. I had no clue that there was an N800 up for grabs, so I and everyone else on Viborg train station was surprised when you announced it. Okay, I was surprised at the announcement. Everyone else was surprised at the big Irish langer jumping around shouting, I won an N800, I won an N800.
Do you think you really did that?
Well, it seems so. Anyway, thanks a bunch. Also, thanks Nokia. My address is as follows. I'm obviously not going to read that out.
Top of the slide, Amsterdam.
But, anyway, Ken Fallon, the Netherlands.
How do you pronounce it?
Please also write the phone number and the address label. Ken. P.S. My wife sadly will not reschedule the christening, so I'll have to be content watching the video on my new N800.
Oh, he's not coming to LRL.
He's not coming to Like Radio Live, no, because his wife's giving birth for the same reason as
the rest of the human race.
Who is it? What's his name? The other pig guy? Dave Neary. Dave
Neary's not coming either.
Total mind blank there for exactly the same reason. Wow. Kid around.
There's
that
been
time.
One other couple that's decided to have a baby on our express instruction.
Yeah, absolutely. We said a couple of weeks ago, Kat and Dave, they needed to get a move on, and then they decided to have a child.
Dave has got a move on.
I don't know whether it's down to Dave or whether we kind of orally impregnated her across the internet. But
last thing I want to think about right now is orally impregnating Kat over the internet. I mean, that doesn't sound right,
no,
does it?
But we are reliably informed by Kat and Dave that they'd already got it on before we mentioned it on the show. But congratulations nonetheless.
Congratulations.
I wonder if Dave's the father.
Oh,
I'm joking. Next.
Stab in the face for Yow. Email from Roger Light, who's...
Bruce Campbell.
Ooh, who's not Bruce Campbell.
He is Bruce Campbell.
On the IRC channel.
Right, Roger.
Asking for a concession. He says, I'd like to request a concession for Like Radio Live, but I can't show you my reason just yet. The link where my reason will reside is...
Is it because he's a Roger with one cow?
But... sadly, he says, there's nothing there at the moment, but hopefully there will be before you do the recording, and we've just looked at the link, and there isn't anything there, so you suck, and no concession for you. That'll be a full fiver, you useless bastard.
What do you like, the tab clear of Hashtag Radio?
He does incidentally point out that the link is http://linkpot.net/beard, and we ought to mention that linkpot.net is Mr. Ben's alternative to Tiny URL.
How are you going to make money out of it, Ben?
I don't know if he is planning on making money out of it, and I suspect he
What's
is.
What's the point?
But his idea is that reading out tiny URLs is awkward.
True.
Because you've got tinyurl.com/6UU.
They need to fix tiny URL so you can say it's tinyurl.com/net.
Well, perhaps. But
URL.
His argument is that...
it's very cool.
Linkpot.net is going to build up URLs out of words rather than out of letters. You'll be able to say...
So you'll be like...
Slash chin beard banana.
Yeah, go to linkpot.net, whatever it is, /rimjob.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you may have thought of this problem.
Linkpot.net/MrBenRimshot. No, but
Camel toe.
I think linkpot.net is cool. So good work, Mr. Ben.
Good nice work, Mr. Ben.
Next email.
Benjo. Frederick Ruddick, which is a great name.
Rudder.
Hi, guys. I think this show is a great length as it is, although longer would be better. Make your mind up. But I have an idea. How about half the length of the show, but do it weekly?
No.
Then all my dreams would
We're never
true.
Doing it weekly.
We're not doing it weekly. Never, give up asking. Ever. How can we put this? We're not doing the show weekly. Bugger off.
Fortnightly was
like
so much
to,
I gave up.
But.
We appreciate the fact that people would like us to, and I'd like to. We just... don't have the time.
We don't have the time, particularly at the moment with fucking Like Radio Live on the horizon.
Which is a tiny bit busy, yes. Baconio.
Freddie Ruddick also. Is that Frederific?
Frederific, yeah.
Yeah.
He's written two emails.
He sent us another email, greedy bastard. He also says, not quite as good as Randy Mansucker, but my American English teacher's next door neighbour was called Pepsi Cola.
No.
Harsh.
That is not quite as good as Randy Mansucker.
I've told you about Reverend Randy Vickers, haven't I? Yep.
Reverend Randy Vickers?
Yeah, he was a Methodist minister up in the northeast of England. He used to come into the audience at the God Channel when he used to work there.
Randy Vickers. Nice.
Reverend Randy Vickers.
That was really short, so I'm going to read another one off. We've had an email from, let's pick one of these two, from It doesn't actually have a name. Me262PA. Well, I put my sandals on and sent you this email. I too was a long-time Ubuntu user. The installation would pick up my Windows partition and install the majority of packages that I would need. Wireless was automatically detected. My proprietary 3D drivers were easily installable as well. Sounds However, good. Debian holds some features that are worth looking at.
Oh, okay. Kind of
feedback that we wanted. Number one, customize. Ubuntu's installer doesn't let you install packages. I think that's a lie. I think it deliberately installs packages to install the operating system.
It doesn't let you install packages. Yeah, you just get Ubuntu and that's it. Not, to my mind, a totally unreasonable thing to do.
I don't understand that.
I want to say, do the installation and then come back later and install what I want once I've got an operating system. Not ponce about in some stupid text thing.
Yeah.
I like the add remove programs and Synaptic. They're easy ways of installing
packages.
Okay.
So. Debian's installer can do a very basic install to install as much as your hard drive can hold install. Number two, speed. Debian loads much fewer modules and resources at boot, which gives it a speedy advantage. Even with a full GNOME and KDE install, the Debian machine is always faster. I don't believe that for a second. I remember, I mean, I haven't used Debian for a while, but I remember when I first used Ubuntu with Warty. I didn't notice any significant slowdown in terms of what
it'd
it was
be, It'd be interesting to see whether, because Ubuntu installs a lot more modules for hardware support than Debian does, because for starters, there's a load of restricted proprietary modules. And secondly, I mean, I don't know whether the Ubuntu policy on getting non-kernel upstream drivers into their kernel is more liberal than Debian's.
I don't know how they compile.
I'd be interested to see, I mean, it doesn't bother me that much because I don't boot my laptop very often.
Right.
But nonetheless.
Number three, no manure coloured theme. It's just a personal preference.
Just change the theme.
Change the fucking theme. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's
blue
brown.
Bounty.
So what? Jesus.
My theme's not brown at all. I have gone to the effort of changing the colour of the top bar to be blue.
My theme is just the default one. Whatever. More important things in life. Both are still good distros, and Ubuntu does take the pain of configuring wireless cards away. Currently, I have Debian Sid on my desktop and Ubuntu on my laptop. So, thanks very much for your input. It's a shame you didn't provide your name, because we could have taken the piss out of you. Okay. Next!
I've got a few very short ones. The first one is from Adrian P. Moisey.
Another P.
He's got P in quotes, so I'm not sure it's actually Adrian P. Moisey.
Fantastic.
Anyway, you guys should get a kicking for claiming that Ubuntu Dapo is 6.04. It is not and never will be. You are all wrong. Okay, we were wrong. No one fucking cares. Next email.
606, wasn't it?
Matthew Holder writes in to tell us...
Did you just say he was wrong?
No, he said we were wrong. Yeah. I agree with him, but whatever, man.
I actually listened to
that. Treasure that tiny, tiny, tiny victory.
Yeah, well done. Do you feel a big, big person?
Matthew Holder writes in to say that they order test equipment from a company called Wayne Kerr Electronics. So the fun just keeps on coming.
Send in your stupid names.
Yep. And Benjamin Fox writes in to say he deserves a concession. Not only because he's a stingy student, but because it seems that several net friends of mine now inhabit your IRC channel, and I might finally get to meet them if I come to LOL this year, and together we shall cause havoc. Well, maybe all the best guys from Ben Fox.
Oh,
I suspect when he says we'll cause havoc, what it means is we'll sit in the corner in the cafe and discuss kernel compilation options. But yes, you can have a concession.
Incidentally,
well done, Ben Fox.
Talking about names, a certain individual I know, who I don't know if you would want me to reference his name. Oh, fuck it, it's Chris Jones. sent me a mail saying that he just was reading Planet Gnome and realised that Benjamin Mako Hill, when you take the Mako out, it's fucking Benny Hill, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Disappointingly, Ben Fox is a fine name, apart from the fact that he sounds like a PI.
Ben Fox PI.
Okay, next email.
Dave Goodger from python.org says, Adam, welcome to the show as a regular, but please speak up. You seem to be slouching away from the microphone. Stop it. We can barely hear you. And just because you're the new guy, that doesn't mean you should hesitate to speak your mind. Actually, because you're the new guy, you should speak your mind. So, Adam, get a fucking move on.
Yep. Wise words, above the fact that he's fucked off on holiday. So he's not in this show at all. So he's been very quiet, but yes.
And Christine James has sent us a Lug Radio Live logo, but I just have the email here, so I can't comment on that.
Okay.
Yep. That's about it, really.
We've had a mail from Andrew Mason, who says, hey guys, my friend is a sysadmin for a well-known visual effects company, which I'm sure runs over 200 Fedora Core 3 desktops, as they run RHEL servers. And yes, I did mean Fedora Core 3. Okay. I think while Ubuntu might be more noticeable in the community conferences, there might be many other places which are using large desktop installations like this, which do run Fedora. which do run on Fedora, that probably wouldn't be apparent outside the walls of the business.
Yeah, fair play.
Then again, I think everyone should all run Slackware, but what the hell do I know? Yes, nothing. What the hell do you know?
Precisely.
Fuck off. I'd say that, yeah, that's a valid point, but I don't think that necessarily means that you should consider any distro more just because people won't necessarily share.
No, I agree. I mean,
I'd say
his point was that you said, when I go to conferences, all I ever see is people running Ubuntu. Perhaps that means that everyone runs Ubuntu.
Yeah. I stand by that statement.
Michael Labovitz, or Labovitz or something. Labovitz, thank you. Yes, probably is what it is.
Life's a bitch.
Writes in to say, I'd like to give Lug Radio some money. Do you have a PayPal account?
Yes, now, it's Jono, paypal at jonobacon.org. Yeah.
you'll find it, you'll be able to send money to jono at chin.lugradio.
yeah, whingers, chin.lugradio.org's back up now, incidentally.
We don't.
Fucking CBH world.
We don't. Well, sort of we do, in that we run the Lug Radio Live ticket thing through No Checks. He says, I can't show up to Lug Radio Live to buy your beer in person since I live in the US. If you want to donate us some money, then you could always buy a Lug Radio Live ticket. If you're desperate to give us money, buy a Lug Radio Live ticket and then don't use it. If you're desperate to give us money. But basically, we don't really have anything.
I'll tell
like
you
that
what would
up.
Be better. Instead of giving us your money, if you want to help us, spread the word about Lug Radio.
That's a better idea, yes.
And when a show comes out, send it to do a dig article or do a Slashdot thing and tell people about Lug Radio Live. That's a really great way of helping.
Yeah,
we don't really need your money.
We don't need money. I mean, if you gave us money, then we go out and we have a beer and that'd be nice and everything. But I've got plenty.
No,
of beer.
We wouldn't.
What would we do with it?
It would sit there languishing.
Languaging.
Yeah.
It would sit there languaging.
Go out and have a beer.
Languaging.
Go out, if someone donates us money, we can go and have a beer with
I'd
it,
like to
we?
Think, but we have enough people buying us beer at Lug Radio Live and Unleashed. That's the reason why we do it.
I agree with you, but I'm talking about buying beer all the rest of the year when I have to pay for it myself.
Oh, you're such a pokey. You really
are. No. Basically, yeah.
What's that about ethics?
Isn't your peg selling business making you enough money?
Yeah, pegseller.com is doing quite well, actually. But
Wife.com's in beta as well.
That you're not supposed to say things like that.
It was a that? Joke that you told me.
That's not the point. Mirko Muller writes in to say to open up quite a big issue, but it's something we have talked about a bit before.
What has he got no money living on the streets?
No, he's working for Fluendo.
He's selling big issues.
Money.
I mean,
shut up. I have some very bad feelings about the deals that have happened in recent times with Microsoft, he's talking about. It's mandatory to gear the community's PR machinery, whatever that might be, to make any companies be aware they lose their credibility and reputation, if they have any, within the open source community. If they choose to enter into contracts like these with Microsoft, what's our take in this issue? Do we think they entirely lose credibility? Have Novell entirely lost credibility because of it?
I'd say
Lynn Spire and Zandros didn't have much anyway to lose.
I'd say within the open source community, which isn't necessarily the industry, they have lost a lot of credibility.
I would say they have lost a lot of credibility.
Not completely.
And Mirko's point is entirely about within the open source community. It's not about within industry or within business or anything.
Right.
He's not coming to Lug Radio Live 2007. Well. I have the feeling I'll be missing a great event, which you will, you inconsiderate jumping bastard. So we would like to see you. It's a shame you're not going to be there, but he is going to be at Guardec, and so are we, because we're official media sponsors.
Official
again.
Media sponsors with two logos, and you'll see one of them.
Are they using my logo?
I don't know.
The
Guadalupe people asked us for a logo and we're like, we haven't really got one.
So I knocked one up in the GIMP and sent it off to him. And then maybe they'll use last year's logo. And it didn't look that good anyway, the one that I did. And then it occurred to me afterwards I could have done one in colour, which I didn't think of.
Why don't they use the one from last year?
Lug Radio.
Didn't they use the one from last year?
Because mine's better.
Yours isn't better. Yours is a logo that somebody would create with fucking blocky edges. It's as if anti-aliasing is some kind of enemy in your copy of the GIMP.
No, mine comes from the official Lug Radio Live 2007 artwork. Yours is just a black box with the word Lug Radio written on
it.
A randomly chosen font.
It was a randomly chosen font that looked fucking cool.
Beard.
It was all fire and everything.
Chin.
Wow.
Didn't we get Mike to do one?
My magnificent chinoid. No, because I didn't have time to bother Mike.
Did
designer.
You leave the Latimer thing in the...
I did. Anyway, you'll find out about that when you're at Lug Radio Live. So that's all the emails for this week. So, yes, thank you very much.
Voicemails. We completely forgot about
We did completely forget about the voicemails.
Let's listen to
Let's listen to Ken Fallon's voicemail.
Thank you. But Jesus, thanks a million. Second hell, let me put down me pig. Ah, pick up me N800. Yes, thank you very much. Cool. Shout Smoke here. Shout Smoke Radio. Yes, it's Ken. I've got an old TFO. Cool. N800, bye.
That's great to hear from you, Ken.
Nice. Thank you very much, Ken. I'm glad you liked it. Glad you liked your N800, which we haven't sent to you yet, but we will do.
Now, at the start of opening up the voicemail number, which I'm sure one of you guys has remembered the number, so
no,
we can announce it in a
number.
Second. We had this particular voicemail from a random individual who seems to be pleased with the phone setup.
Oh, yes. Hello. Oh, by the way, wonderful phone system. Yes. So, I was just phoning to say that, in my opinion, the only person who consistently makes any sense whatsoever is the Bald. The rest of you, you're okay. Don't give up. Try harder, etc. But, yeah, that's all, really. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah, thanks very much
for
that.
Who could that be?
You Bald twat. And finally, we got shooed.
We did get a shoe.
From a Scottishman.
Was it?
Patent, not patent. You fucking Yankee man suckers.
Yes, quite blatantly. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah. There it is. God, it's...
Officially shooed, yes, you're quite right. Thank you very much. So,
right,
yeah,
excellent.
That's the emails. You can continue to send us emails, although I ought to point out that it is the last show of the season, really. I mean, we're not going to read emails at Lug Radio Live and Unleashed.
It's not the last show of the season.
It is the last show of the season.
It isn't.
Lug Radio Live and Unleashed does not count as a proper show.
It is.
It's not. It's weird. Anyway, right.
I'm going to kill you.
Last show of the season.
With a bass guitar.
So you can send us emails, but you won't get them read out until September, but we still like to hear them anyway. We normally come back to this huge mountain of emails in September.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be good. So,
wow, season 5.
So send us emails. We would say send us voicemails, because they're cool, but none of us can remember the voicemail now because Aid's not here.
So go to lugradio.org, and it'll be on there. Won't it?
All right. Yeah, all right, yeah. I'll update the website.
Cool.
Yes. Lug Radio Live is this Saturday.
This Saturday.
This Saturday.
This Saturday.
Now, after 9 months of planning, none of it's finished. And we're shitting ourselves.
We have been working our asses off for a long time on this.
We have. It's going to be fantastic.
Yes. So we should give an overview of the weekend, because some stuff has not been hugely announced, the social stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's go from start to finish, right?
Okay.
I'm going to be as quick as possible.
Yep. We start Friday night at the Hogshead in Wolverhampton.
It's in central Wolverhampton, very close to
the
train station.
Smoking ban, brilliant.
Turn up about, I don't know, 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Something like that.
And it's going to be in the beer garden. So going to the beer garden in the Hogshead. Now the Hogshead is, I believe, you've got to be 18 to get in. So if you're under 18... you should be in bed anyway.
Mike Erskine got refused entry last year for looking like a criminal.
Because he's nuts.
That's what I said. That's all the problems.
Well, looking like a clown,
but
more like.
He turned up saying that he had tracksuit trousers on, so they wouldn't let him in. Now, I think it's because he looks like a criminal, much as we love the bloke. Criminal.
We do love the bloke, but, you know.
So
ditch the Elizabeth Duke jewellery.
So, yeah, you might want to bear that in mind if you're showing up. And Sid Pin couldn't get in either because he wasn't 18, but now he
as
is. Hello, I'm Sid Pin.
Is Sid Pin friends with us again?
He is. He is. He's official Lug Radio Live photographer.
With again,
him and Ron.
He does run.
Okay, and then Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, it kicks off. Doors open at...
10 o'clock. I think it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. So the doors open now. The Lug Radio Live venue is at the Lighthouse in Wolverhampton. It's literally walking distance. Come out from the train station. If you get the train in, I was told incidentally, I didn't tell you guys about this, what's his name? I completely have a mind blank. The Australian shovel guy.
Kynan.
I saw Kynan the other day at Google, and he said that when he arrived on the train. The train was full of Lug Radio people.
Really?
Which I think's pretty cool.
That'd be wicked.
So anyway, if you get the train in, literally just walk down the road.
Have a big sign that says, I'm going to Lug Radio Live, and then you'll meet other people like it.
If you walk down the road, you'll just keep walking down the road.
There's
and you'll
a
get
map on the Lug Radio Live website.
And there'll be signs directly there.
You might
want
to print that out.
So it doors open at 10. It's going to... All day, there's going to be over 40 speakers.
The doors open at 10.
They do now. There's going to be over 40 speakers. There's going to be a full exhibition. There's going to be the Gongathon Lightbulb Talk extravaganza. There's going to be the Masturbate. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. And then on the Saturday night, at the same place, there's going to be the social event, which is going to be the Lug Radio Live Party.
Yep. So
that's going to kick off at about probably about seven, half seven, something like that.
Yeah, there or thereabouts. About half seven, 8 o'clock.
And that's going to run through till about 1 or 2.
Basically, we boot everybody out after like Radio Live and Unleashed at about 6 o'clock.
Go and get some food,
and then you go and get some food and put some clean pants on, and then come back to the party.
That's going to run through
at 2,
something like that too. We're going to have a DJ as well, and maybe some DJ slots, which was suggested to us by someone who I can't remember.
I can't remember who.
And that's news to you, isn't it?
Might be new. It is news to me.
And then on the Sunday, doors open about 10:30, I believe, and we have another full day of stuff, loads of stuff going on, great speakers. And then we finish at about 4 o'clock, I believe.
Yep, we do. We start winding up at 4 o'clock, and then you all go home thinking, what a brilliant event.
The other thing is that on the Sunday night, the Lug Radio the Lug Radio hardcore fans who hang out in the Hash Lug Radio channel tend to have a little get together. It's completely unofficial, but we like to mention it now
because it is quite cool.
And that's at the Quality Hotel in Wolverhampton. So there's a bar there. Go there.
Quality in Penrhode.
Go there and you can hang out the hardcore, and I'd imagine the five of us are going to be there.
Thank you and goodbye.
That was nice. It was nice to be, or shall I say, well, it's that time of the show again. Sorry, that's my aid impression again.
Shit, is aid is aid a C-3PO doing some kind of children's TV show?
Yes, that is what he is.
Anyway, yes, it's the end of the show. It's the end of the series, apart from Lug Radio Live and Unleashed.
It's fucking not the end of the series. I'm going to stab you in the face with a fucking bottle of comfort.
What a menacing threat that is.
Flat cow.
Those of you who are coming to Lug Radio Live, we will see you on Saturday. That should be all of you who are listening, by the way.
Yeah.
Don't think you've got an excuse just because you live 18,000 miles away.
We can't fit 20,000. Can you live 18,000 miles from anywhere on Earth?
Yeah, just about.
Don't you start not coming back around?
No, no.
I thought it was like 16,000 and then that was it.
18,000 is about as far away as you can live.
Do you actually know this?
Yes.
You have been proven wrong many times in geography.
On many occasions, you have said that you actually know something when later we find out.
It's complete shite.
I must confess, I'm more of a historian than I am a geographer. I have to confess, but nonetheless. That.
So
it's been a fun show. And obviously the next show is going to be particularly fun.
All of you been with corks on your hats, or don't think you can avoid coming just because you chucked a load of tea into the harbour 300 years ago. Come to Lug Radio Live. It's on Saturday. While I think about it, go and register if you haven't registered yet.
Yes.
You can buy a ticket on the door, but it's nice to register so we've got a frigging clue that you're coming. Lugradio.org/live.
Yeah,
and then click on the register link.
Yes, it's going to be. I can't believe it's the Saturday. It's come around so quickly.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty mad. And then
it's terrifying. And there's so much cool stuff that you lot don't know about.
Oh, it's going to be. Yeah, it's going to be a real treat. So
yes.
We'll see you.
So thank you very much. Saturday. We shall see you on Saturday.
Bye.
Bye.
Ed writes in,
a couple of weeks ago, we had a bunch of mail get bounced because of a down relay. This mail was sent from a Windows box. So I knew how to clear up the fallout and resend the mail with a custom Perl script and a Unix box, because I like freedom.
Yay.
My plan failed because the line feeds on Unix are /N and /R/N on Win32. About 300 people got mail from us with malformed headers because of a line feed error. Could whoever it was that said fence post error so comically please say, just for me, line break error in the same tone? It would really make my year.
And who said that was Matthew P. Revell, so it's quite convenient that he's back for this show.
Line break error!
Thank you very much, Ed. I'm glad we've made your year. We'll see you next year.
Ta-ta, biatch.